time for more movie thoughts from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Do you remember me? Do you even know my mother's name? Do you know any of their names? When I was a boy, they took everything from me. The rich don't see us as people. To them, we're animals.
Both of us. We're broken.
If a man wishes to challenge the gods, he must become more than a man. He must become a beast.
Who is he?
Nobody. Just some crazy kid from the gutter.
He has to be extinguished.
Before your nobody becomes a somebody.
Just one small ember can burn down everything.
Make them remember your name.
You've been veins to rose. Some stranger to you and me.
I just don't know. I don't know where he's going to go, to be absolutely honest. I mean, we've heard Phil Collins in the air tonight, which is great. We've heard the trailer. We've heard the fact that, well, nothing happens for the first hour, apart from the fact that people get to know the character. We think, well, it's a Dev Patel-directed movie. So should it be a 15 certificate, or is it just full of violence and nothing but violence? Is it anything to do with respect to Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes? Clearly not. Has it got anything to do with simians at all? Well, sort of. Richard Fitzwilliams, Monkey Man, what is this all about? Did you enjoy it? And is it a case of, well, yes, go and see it because it tells you all sorts of things about fighting and it helps prepare you for living in London?
I have to say, Alex, that it is a very memorable film, which doesn't answer your question, of course. Did I enjoy it? I enjoyed parts of it very much, but it was... it's one of the most violent films that I can remember. When it comes to, well, pretty visceral violence, there was a lot of...
You have a high tolerance, Richard, obviously. You're living in Highgate, so a tolerance for extreme violence is part of
not
the
Highgate itself. But not Highgate itself, I constantly get the feeling that those who live in the suburb of Highgate, as opposed to Hampstead, say, or Golders Green or Finchley, feel that they're very close to the Almighty, and I'm happy to say that I do not live in Highgate. I do know, however, one or two people who do, and indeed they include...
I mean, it's a great cemetery, Richard, is all I'm saying, you know?
Well, I haven't been there either, but that perhaps is something that several of the characters in this film would be heading to the cemetery pretty quickly. It's an idiosyncratic movie. It is absolutely amazing that it's Deb Patel's debut as a director. I mean, it
Can
is
he not
an
just
extraordinary...
keep the camera straight, though? Does he have to keep moving the camera around all over the place? I mean, really?
You know, there are all sorts of things in this movie that are infuriating, and I'm not pretending that it all made sense either, but as a tale of revenge, it is, and the use of flashbacks and the use of helicopter shots, I mean, pretty well anything to capture Mumbai, and it's amazing. I don't know it personally, but I mean, it looks extraordinary. The movie has unforgettable visuals. It also has an amazing performance by Dev Patel. And as for the title, just to explain, and the constant nods to the John Wick series, to Bruce Lee and so on, and also a theological theme, which is rather curious. I wasn't familiar with Hanuman, a divine monkey in Hindu texts. The monkey was a child when he saw the sun and mistook it for a mango. The gods were displeased and punished him. Well, I'm not quite sure, actually, how that fits into this particular story.
That's because he'd eaten the mango, Richard. He ate the mango, so therefore he ate the sun. So understandably, if you are one of the divine entities that put the sun there, the last thing you want is some oike going up there and eating it.
Yet you wouldn't want that. But then what you're facing here is, it's a terrifying story, actually, because that constant flashbacks through this movie, which show that the monkey man, you're dealing with someone who, the kid is the name of Patel's character. Now, he's a bare-knuckle boxer with a monkey mask. And in the evenings, he gets knocked out and smashed up with, as is cinematic tradition, hardly a bruise that one might bring up equally from time to time. There are a few scars, but nothing anyway that disturbs the visual the visual effect that Dev Patel wants. He's haunted by what happens to, what happened to his family, to his mother. She was brutally killed, the family dispossessed, the police corrupt. Well, they're going to pay for it. And there are a variety of individuals who he tracks down from, because after his ring fights, he goes and in the various clubs and the alleyways and so forth. You get to know Mabuya pretty well in visual terms in this film. He works his way to get revenge on those who've wronged him and wronged his family. There's the corrupt police chief, Rala Singh, played by Sikandar Kaur. Rala Singh, played by Sikandar Kaur. And then there's a very bizarre religious figure, Guru Baba Shakti, played by Makaran Deshpande, who's backing corrupt politicians to gain power. Now, the film, apparently, and this is just a couple of days old, hasn't been released in India yet, and it's supposed to be an attack on the far right in India, which may cause problems for its distribution. But there's absolutely no doubt that what we've got here, I mean, when the kid takes revenge on you, you know all about it. And the way it is graphically filmed, I have to admit, made me look away several times. Having
it has
said
got
that,
an 18 certificate, Richard. It has got an 18 certificate.
That is sensible. But having said that, it is, with its myths, with the contemporary drama, the revenge, the extraordinary performance by Dev Patel in the central role. I mean, that it really is amazing. And what the camera will do, I mean, it'll film a part of a scene, but then it'll zoom away to a painting on the wall or whatever it wishes to do. You really have got the idea that there's an amazing talent here visually. It is extraordinary. Whether it's a helicopter shot of the guru's heli about to land on a helipad, or whether it's the alleyways of teeming multitudes, some amazing,
too much shaky cam, Richard. Too much shaky cam. We don't need enough shaky cam.
I was amazed. I did find it amazing with the one problem with some of the scenes. But yes, I mean, it is extraordinary, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he's doing next. So quite a movie.
He's not going to go full 10. He might give it an 8.5 or a 9, possibly.
It an 8. Yes, absolutely. Yes, I would give it an 8.
Fia van den Bogert. Is Monkey Man something that you would be looking forward to, or is it a case of, well, if it's not got anything to do with 12 Monkeys and Bruce Willis, or indeed Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I'm not interested?
Well, that is certainly not the case. No, I'm interested, actually. But I mean, I've never been to Mumbai, so if it has great shots of Mumbai, I mean, that's always a win. But I'm just scared of the shaky shots. I'll just have to keep like moving my laptop along with the shot so I can watch it in a normal setting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's it. Synchronize your device to actually ensure that you can work there, or ensure that the cinema you go to see it in has an earthquake at the same time. Either of those will actually give you a similar sort of.
Watch it on a very shaky road, like driving, or like someone else will drive, and you can hold, and then you'll just like be
Yeah, this is true.
Bit worried.
Anna Koshkonel, I noticed that you are busily sort of doing multitasking in all sorts of ways, having just given a very cogent review of T.J. Hooker, classic series from the 1980s. Any thoughts on Monkey Man, or is it a case of, well, it doesn't have Davy Jones in it, so it's not for me?
Actually, I wasn't doing multitasking. I was trying to connect from my laptop here, but to be honest, I don't know if I'm a fan of a movie where someone lets other people beat him when he's wearing a gorilla mask, but it does sound interesting, even though the title Monkey Man sounds a bit intriguing. So maybe I'll give it a shot because I saw that it's playing here in Lincoln at 9 today. So who knows? Maybe I'll just go there after fighting my monkeys at work.
You could fight the monkeys at work, do your full sort of shift there, go and see Monkey Man, and then come and attend Countryside Links on a location report with the team tomorrow. So it just goes to show these Romanians, they are 24-hour party people, quite clearly. You know, the message is across there. Sarah Huntley, now clearly we are of the generation that when we start talking about Monkey Man, we automatically think Davy Jones, Mike Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz, Peter Tork. We start thinking Daydream Believer. Nothing like that at all in Monkey Man. Any thoughts on this? Is it one for you?
No, it's not one for me. Although I say hey hey with the monkeys,
Ah.
no, it's all too grim. I just want something happy. No,
Yeah.
definitely, it's a definite no.
Definite
Well,
no.
it might be happy in the way that's perhaps, I can't give any spoilers, his revenge might succeed. And if that's the case, wouldn't you be happy?
Revenge
Very
is never
happy.
good. You know, even if it's a dish best served cold, it's still never good. Natasha, Monkey Man?
I was contemplating this one. I was booking my tickets for going to see Godzilla tomorrow, and it was one that popped up, and I am contemplating it because
Well, it's
I love
Godzilla
Dev
Kong,
Patel.
so easily confused. Godzilla Kong, another Monkey Man, except it's a
Right.
real monkey, giant one.
Could do a monkey double hitter. I'm a little bit worried about some of the graphicness of some of the violence Richard has described. That's probably the only thing holding me back. I don't necessarily do well with certain amounts of gore. Like it depends. Like I can do like an ancient battle sequence where it's, do you know what I mean? But I can't do gruesome torture scenes or anything like that. So I don't know the level of the gore in it and whether that would put me off. If Richard's saying he looked away, it's making me a little bit worried.
Well, sometimes our greatest fear is accepting that someone can honestly love us for who we are, as indeed the text by Erin Doom, interesting name, and indeed Eleonora Fiorini and Alessandro Giovinavesi did in this wonderful homage to good, worthwhile care homes, orphanages, where you have a charming person called Margaret, who is basically every young child's dream to actually be looked after by Margaret, especially if you play the piano. Natasha, would you like to actually open the book on something which apparently brought tears to your eyes in many ways?
So this is the Tear Smith, known in Italian. I apologize, listener, if you are Italian or your family is Italian, I'm probably going to offend you. Fabbricante della Lacrimosa, I think is how they pronounce it in Italian. The reason I
Lacrimosa.
say that's it, good job, Alex. Thank you. Good cover. We should
Fabbricante
work
di
together more.
lacrime, if you
This
want
is
the
why we
full
work
Italian.
together. So as you can probably gather, this is an Italian film. There are options to watch it dubbed in English, though, as some of my friends have done. They have watched the dub version as opposed to the sub version. Me personally, I believe films should be watched in the movies that in the language that they're made in. So I watched it
Use
subbed.
subtitles.
We'll get into that in a minute. But they did watch the dub version in English with no subtitles, and they also enjoyed it. So that's an option for people who don't want to subtitle, just throwing that one out there. So what is the Tear Smith? So it revolves around this story that's sort of told in this orphanage. So we start following this little girl called Nika. And unfortunately, in the first sort of minute or so of the movie, I don't think it's spoilers to say she gets
She has a
orphaned.
major car
Her parents,
crash.
she has a terrible, terrible car crash. And there's a lot of symbolization going on, and we'll get into that a little bit when we unpack some stuff. But her parents end up in a terrible road crash. They're biologists. They're on their way to the next job. And, yep, terrible car crash. And she ends up in this orphanage. Now, this orphanage is known as Sunny Creek Orphanage, which is a actual terrible name. And the poor children who live there end up calling it Graves, because apparently that's where the soul goes to die. And there's a legend that circulates within this orphanage about a tearsmith, or a maker of tears, who sort of lives in the orphanage, and he crafts all of the fears and the anxieties that inhabit your heart. So you can sort of tell what a lovely, wonderful, stellar place this orphanage is to be and grow up in. And you see sort of Nika arriving and the terrible, cruel reception she gets by Margaret when she arrives, and all of her possessions are stripped.
It's not
from
cruel.
Her.
She's just putting order and discipline in place. That's all.
Oh, she's. I'm not sure I'd let her watch any of my children, but anyway. then you sort of skip forward. I'm guessing it's not implied, but I'm guessing at least 7 or 8 years. There's sort of a time skip within the sort of first 5 minutes of the movie.
I thought they were very old school children.
They were. There were, and it skipped
at least
through
in the mid 20s.
I would say it kind of last year of high school, I believe, is I think what they were kind of going for. It sort of skips that last year of high school, and Nika's getting adopted, which is the one thing she's wanted all the time. That's the one thing she sort of held
you
on to.
You can't lose your child and then
the
simply
orphanage.
Adopt a replacement. It's not going to work.
Yeah, that's sort of touched on a little bit later on, but she's adopted by Anna and Norman, and they take her home. And as they're sort of exiting, they hear this very beautiful piano playing, and they go into the music room. And that's
we must have that child as well, as Michael Jackson might want to have said, allegedly.
They want to have Regal, who's also there playing the piano. Is it the link to the deceased son? We'll find out more about that later on in the movie. So Regal and Nika both go home together, and you think Nika would be overjoyed. She's found her family at last, except she's got adopted with Regal, who is the one child
in the orphanage.
In
love with her.
She picks who he actively does not like. He's actively hostile towards her, and he's the one child that she sort of
because he loves her, Natasha. You always hurt the ones you love.
Spoiler.
And we see how this adoption goes. Now, we sort of see Nika trying to put on a face, trying to leave everything behind it. There's some really nice coming of age messages in this movie in terms of not, you know, the way that we present ourselves and the way that we have to hold ourselves to certain standards. And I think it's really nicely unpacked. It's interesting to see how different characters sort of come in and flow, and different imagery comes in and flows and plays into the movie. We sort of see Nika try and move on past the abuse that she suffered, but bit of a trigger warning for people who have been victims of domestic abuse and that sort of thing. There are flashbacks, and there is a bit of trauma and panic attack present. So if that's something that might trigger you, maybe just go into that with open eyes about that. You see her trying to work through it, and you see her trying to put her soul literally back together from where she's been broken. And it's a really beautiful story. I will say, look, I've read a lot about this movie online in terms of some of the reviews. Personally, friends of mine that have watched it have all really loved it. The script is not perfect. There are a lot of cliches.
You've
the
got
symbolism...
music by George Ezra, though, and you got music by Billie Eilish.
I know, the soundtrack is banging. It's so good. The plot is not the most perfect plot in the world. I've heard people compare it as a love child of Oliver Twist and Twilight. I can kind of see where they went with that, but it worked because it's Italian. And I think that's the only reason this whole film works, is because it's Italian. Wow. And it is flamboyant and it is extra, but I love it for that. And it works because of it. I also think the chemistry between the two main characters. So Simone Baldassarroni, who plays Regal, and Caterina Ferrioli, who plays Nika. I thought their chemistry was very believable. The way they sort of draw to each other and the way that they deliver lines. I thought generally the messages that it had and the way that it unpacked, you know, that sort of how you gain strength and how you rebuild yourself when you're going through grief, when you've gone through this really trying time, you face insurmountable obstacles. I liked the way that it unpacked that. and the way that it sort of twisted towards the end. Did some of the plot points make sense? No. Was some of it predictable? Yes. But some of it was unpredictable as well. So, you know, it's got that playing for it. Overall, okay. I enjoyed this movie. I would give it an 8.5, which I know is high. A lot of people wouldn't agree, but I enjoyed it a lot, actually, for what it was.
Thea, I presume you've also seen this number in the original Italian. Also agree the notion of you don't simply replace your dead child with a new one from an adoption agency. It's not quite as simple as that. It's like getting a pet, isn't it, really? But anyway, any thoughts on the Tia Smith?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's not very healthy of those parents to do that. And also just immediately like be there and just like, oh, we'll just take two because... Well, what the hell?
Buy one, get one free. Let's face it. That's what you do with human beings these days.
But no, I mean, I wasn't as happy with the film. I just didn't really like that there were so many plot holes. And I mean, they did have great chemistry, but also sometimes where it just didn't really make just didn't really make sense. And there were just too many things that they wanted to do. Like with the parents who had their issues, and then with the grave, and then those two, and it just, I think maybe a movie was a bit is too short, and I mean that's often the problem with when they try to make films out of books, where it's just they try to do too many things and it doesn't really work. So maybe if they tried making it a series, it would have made more sense, and they could have done like the development of the characters would have been better. And that's why it didn't really make sense to me.
A very depressing series. I suspect you're going for a 6 as far as this is concerned, Vera. Would that be the case?
Yeah, maybe a 5.5.
Yeah. Well, it's intriguing because, as Natasha said, by no means a perfect film, but she adored it. I think Mr. Fitzwilliams would enjoy this one, quote Natasha Wanton few days ago. So, Mr. Fitzwilliams, would you actually enjoy The Tia Smith? Is it one for you, given, obviously, your fondness for coming-of-age stories and, of course, coming-of-age stories set in Italian, Fabbricante di Lacrime? It's got to be a winner, surely.
It's very beautiful as well. Like, visually, I thought it was very beautifully crafted, which is what I thought he would appreciate the artistry of the shots and the beauty of it, is what I was going for with that comment.
But no shaky cam. And also no vomiting or indeed bodily fluids, which is a plus for me.
Alex, how you could associate me, even by implication, with such behavior. I know that you've got phobias.
That's not a phobia. It's just a dislike.
But
I'm not going to run screaming if somebody vomits. I'm just going to say it's not a good behavior.
You also have a habit of bringing it up when films...
Yeah, quite literally.
No, but I mean, that means that those who like seeing them may be attracted to it, but they're not.
Yeah, well, as I say, I think you need to have serious psychological help if that's the case. Sarah Huntley, what about yourself? I know you love Italy. Is this one which you think, yeah, I mean, it's like the children I deal with every day at Alain's and Dulwich could be living this life.
Well, I have one question for Natasha. Would your mother like it?
I would recommend it to her. I'm not sure if she would like it or if she would think it was a bit... It's a teenage romance, so I'm not sure if she would or she wouldn't. I think she could appreciate things about it. I think she could appreciate the chemistry there. I think parts of the story, because of the plot, I don't know how well she would be able to navigate some of that, because as Fia said, there is an issue with some of the plot holes. I have spoken to her about it, but I'm not sure if it would be like Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, which she loved. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that sort of movie. There is, I don't want to spoil the ending, but I wouldn't say it is all doom and gloom. I think I liked the ending in that sense. I thought there was hope in the movie, even with all of the trauma, if that answers your question.
Well, ciao, bella. I think it will be a yes, because life's pretty grim here at the moment with the weather. So I'm planning how can I watch it? Is it on, how do we watch it?
It's on Netflix,
Sarah.
At least in Australia.
Right. And in Britain. Right. I would go 6 out of 10. Anna Koshkinel, what would your choice be? Is it one for you?
Well, I did watch it in Italian, and to be honest, I know a bit of Italian, and I saw that the translation and the subtitles weren't quite it, so that was disappointing because I wanted to get everything out of it. It was okay, not something that I would rewatch, to be honest, because at times it was just too much in too little time. And even though they had so many things going on, at some points I felt like they were dragging the story at times. So I don't know. It was altogether, it was I can't say a nice romance drama movie. It was an interesting drama that had bits of romance, and those bits were interesting, and the chemistry on screen. And I really liked there was this actor called Alessandro Bedetti, because I have his name here. He was quite interesting, and Caterina as well, because I searched her afterwards and I saw that she used to be a model and she did a few sketches, and they were good, but it's not something that I would quite watch, honestly, or rewatch on a, I don't know, as a memory
I
or
mean,
anything.
I'm suspecting a 6 out of 10, which is kind of my score as well, especially with if you're
Yeah.
an Italian speaker, you realize. But the subtitles aren't accurately translating what's being said on screen. Anyway, it's time, Richard. It is time at last for you to have the opportunity to delve into Millie Bobby Brown's latest adventure, an adventure which Natasha and Fia and Sarah and Anna has all and myself have already looked at in depth. But now, where are you going to go? Are you a damsel in distress, or is it just a case of a damsel in another costume entirely?
Well, we know from the beginning of this film that this is not the customary, and by the customary, you go back obviously decades, where the knights tended to rescue damsels and so forth. It's a very different sort of movie, and indeed a very entertaining one, I thought, as a dark fantasy indeed, directed by Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, and I found it a thoroughly enjoyable experience. We meet the dragon, played or voiced, should I say, by Shaoshath Agdashloo, when the dragon is attacked by the first king of Aurea, who leads a futile attack on it. All his men are killed. He's the mercy of the dragon, and a terrible crime has also been committed. A crime which subsequently, and we meet centuries later, we take up the action, where the dragon's hatchlings have something may well have happened to them. It's a thoroughly entertaining movie, I have to say. I mean, I'm Millie Bobby Brown. I was particularly keen on when I first saw her.
You're a Millie Bobby Brown fan from the days of Enola Holmes and not Stranger
Absolutely.
Things, because you
No,
probably haven't
absolutely.
watched Stranger Things.
I haven't watched Stranger
No.
Things. I have, however, seen the play.
Yeah, no, it's the play that, yeah, well, yes, no. Anyway, you enjoyed the movie. Marks out of 10.
No, but I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I'd simply say that Elodie, the daughter of Lord Beyford, Elodie played by Millie Bobby Brown, Lord Beyford played by Ray Winston, and is a bit of a so-and-so. Most of the men don't come off particularly well in a lot of movies these days. She's marrying Prince Henry, played by Nick Robinson, the son of Isabel, played by Robin Wright, the cruel queen. And, well, they've no option there because their kingdom has no money. But when she and Henry start to bond, well, it's not going to last very long because Queen Isabel is very dismissive of Lady Beyford, the stepmother of Elodie, played by Angela Bassett, and too late they're thinking of calling the marriage off. The ritual following the wedding is the fun bit, Alex, because, as you know, to placate the dragon, I'm afraid the prince has to throw Elodie down a chasm into the dragon's lair. And I have to say, we spent about half an hour there, it must have been, or something like that, because
Yeah, which needed it
it's.
for the wig attention, Richard. It was the fact that she'd actually lost her wig there, so clearly they had to do a lot of reshoots just on the hair issues alone.
Well, Alex, I think that if you have any problems with any burns, I mean,
I'm
you
not
will have
wearing
no.
a wig, Richard, and I don't intend to.
Well, you could be helped by the divine slugs that can be found in a
Yeah,
cave.
I already have been, and apparently they're running the university, but still, never mind.
Moving swiftly on, we find part of the cave illuminated by notes from past victims and then the dead dragon's hatchlings. Well, they play a very important part in what happens subsequently, and which involves her sister, and indeed involves another wedding. The whole thing sounds very silly, perhaps, but it depends if you want to get in on the action, if you like Millie Bobby Brown, which I do. Also, visually, I mean, as I say, an awful lot of it's in the dark, but it tells a story. It tells a story very entertainingly. It's also one of these fantasy movies where there's a good deal of humour. It never takes itself too seriously, and it's a colourful, entertaining, amusing movie that knows exactly where it is in the space of things. It's not particularly pretentious. No one is given much of a chance to act in the conventional sense. The Millie Bobby Brown is herself, and who would ask for a great deal more? And if you're bad, you're very bad. If you're good, you're very good. If you're where Ray Winston, well, you're not particularly good. And certainly, you can sit back and enjoy this and find you're having a lot of fun. And that's what people need from time to time. I mean, Sarah was saying that's what she needs occasionally. So if you find a fantasy film of this sort suits your mood, then it's a good one to watch.
It was March the 10th when we first looked at Damsel Natasha Wanton. Was your prediction correct with respect to Richard? Because I think, if memory serves, you weren't quite as much enamoured with respect to the overall production.
I gave it an 8, so I did enjoy it. A lot of people have been saying that I've been quite pessimistic about this movie. I have not been pessimistic about this movie. Let me explain a little bit about my psyche and where we are with this situation. I thought it was a very good movie. I thought it was a very enjoyable movie. I loved the visual effects. Some people online have been complaining about the visual effects and particularly the animation of the dragon. I disagree. I really like the animation in it. I like the way that they did the dragon and the interpretation of that. I thought that, yeah, Millie Bobby Brown's performance was great. It was very Millie Bobby Brown. She gave it everything, and I thought it paid off well. My issue was I felt like I could have done with maybe 20 minutes less of Millie Bobby Brown running around in the dark screaming, and a little bit more of sort of a world building. I mean, you've got Angela Bassett, you've got Robin White. Let's use these, strong female actresses. And that was my issue with it, is that it could have been so much better. It was a good movie that failed to be great. And it was more of a frustration, I think, that came from me rather than me disliking the movie. I really enjoyed watching that movie, but I was frustrated by the potential that it had to be a 10 when it was only an 8. I've seen some feedback and some criticism online, with sort of some critics suggesting that maybe because it was a female lead in a fantasy role, that's why people don't like it. I thoroughly disagree with that feedback from those critics. I don't think it was because it was a female lead. I think it was the way that the script just let Millie Bobby Brown run away with it and gave her too much screen time. That was
So
probably what
sometimes,
happened.
Natasha, as an actor, you just have to take the paycheck and the heck with it. Not that Sarah Hunter could ever do that, but
I'm just trying to give them suggestions for how it could be better. I think the issue was the lack of the world building and the lack of the character development for the other characters, not necessarily that there was a female protagonist that was the issue. I disagree with that feedback. I think the world building could have been better.
I have to say that I never felt with, I mean, my expectations were met by it, and I agree with everything you were saying about the pluses. Regarding the minuses, I just don't feel it was quite the movie that was going to give Robin Wright, Angela Bassett, Ray Winston a chance to,
But it gave him a good paycheck, Richard. That's the important thing.
Well, I mean, that's what they had, but then that I think the movie met expectations regarding regarding being female, which was obvious from the beginning, and all movies are, or that can be at the moment. They're addressing decades of inequality, we know that.
Doesn't say much about the transgender issue, though, and that's a whole other egg cup to actually explore. Fia, any thoughts from yourself, finally?
Well, I completely agree with Natasha, and I recall I was a bit more negative than you,
much
Natasha.
More, yeah.
Much more.
Five, I think you gave it.
Yeah, maybe it's the weather that I'm just a bit more negative.
It's too much darkness in that. That was too much. I do agree with Natasha about that. Yeah, that could have been cut. Cut almost, if not by half, it could have been cut by a third.
Yeah. And I also, my other problem was that they had a different accent. There was like some people were speaking in a British accent and others were in an American accent.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that came
It was all over the place. I mean, if Sarah Hunty was giving voice coaching sessions on that, she would have said, look, you'd be better off casting Michael Owen in the lead as opposed to Ray Winston. But anyway, Sarah, any thoughts from yourself?
Well, listening to you all, I think I'd rather go for the Italian this week. I'm like Fitzwilliams, I really like Millie Bobby Brown, and she can hold her own. But I agree, actually, not just because that's my area, but I really agree with Fia. Like, I cannot stand it when you have an American accent and an English accent. And
about a plot that's supposed to be based in Wales.
Well, exactly. I totally understand if you want to base something somewhere and everybody chooses the same accent to show the ruralness or the capital and you get it all America. But that then just, your head's going, hang on, where are we? Where are we? Where are we? So that would really, really irritate me. So I'm going to have a glass of vino with spaghetti bolognese and watch the Italian tonight. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, next up on our review slot, Natasha, Kong versus Godzilla. Godzilla, Kong. Excellent.
Oh, yes.
Followed that, and of course.
It will be Civil War from me next week. Mm. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Of course, because you've got Jessica Plemons and Kirsten Dunst in there, and they're both a couple. So as an item, what can you say? But Richard, what kind of a film critic are you? I'll just put that out there in terms of Civil War. What kind of a film critic are you?
He is a brilliant one.
Yeah, but there's a segment in Civil War, and I'm giving him a spoiler here.
No.
Come on, stop.
I can understand what this is about. The spoilers are deadly. No.
Alex, I'm going to challenge you now because your accents are so good. You are so good every week. We had a really interesting array last week. I think that when you sign off, you should say goodbye to us all in Italian, either in Italian or in an Italian accent this week. I think each week we should have a different accent from you. It's Polish next week, by the way, just so you practice. So when you get to that today, can we have it in an Italian way?
Well, we'd like to say molto grazie to Natasha, to Thea, to Richard, to Sarah, and of course to Anna Koshkonel. It has been a glorious review of the films that we have looked at. And we have to say buongiorno and keep watching those movies.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focused EOU. Ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. My acres of a land I've achieved, it may be hard for you to stop and believe, but for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. For you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you owe me, then all of this will go away. My many artifacts, the list goes on. If you just say the words, I'll up and run. Oh, to you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd even do. Oh, to you, ooh, ooh, I'd even do. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. My friends and family, they don't understand. They fear they'll lose so much if you take my hand. But for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd lose it all. Ooh, for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd lose it all. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change. Baby, if you want me, then all of this will go away. My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest. Golden grand piano, my beautiful Castillo, you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Ooh, for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all.
There are certain magical moments over the years that I would obviously continue to cherish and will ever cherish. And one of those for me was when I had my first ever visit to Red Car Racecourse. It led to a whole range of things. And who was I fortunate enough to be actually be shown around a Red Car Racecourse by and actually introduced to all of the behind the scenes work of the racecourse, etc.? Well, it was the legendary Jack Burry. Jack Burry with his famous red shirt, of course, very much the four there. And since then, obviously, Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting have been key supporters of the Injured Jockeys Fund. So, astoundingly, this is 60 years old now. We're delighted to welcome to the programme the Chief Executive Officer of the Injured Jockeys Fund. That's Lisa Hancock to the programme. How are you, Lisa?
Yeah, great. Good morning. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, I had to share that little Jack Burry story because I always thought he was a wonderful person and he had such an enthusiasm and a drive, obviously still focuses on the whole area of the whole system. And I was shocked, really, this is probably 2005, 2006, just to find out how little there was to actually look after jockeys if they did have unfortunate injuries and so on and so forth. So first of all, for those people who aren't aware of the Injured Jockeys Fund, just share with us what it does and how it's such a vital part of the whole racecourse industry.
Thank you. Well, Jack, you know, is very instrumental in everything that we've achieved. And it was he and Lord John Oakesy, following the falls of Paddy Farrell and Tim Brookshaw in 1964, they realised that we needed a support mechanism within racing to help those who did suffer career-ending injuries or similar. And so that was how the Injured Jockeys Fund was first established. And from a very, very early beginnings, we've grown into quite a significant charity now, where we have a typical annual expenditure of some $5 million a year supporting jockeys and their families when they've had tough times. And that help might be financial, it might be medical, or it might be pastoral. I mean, it's a real mix. And we have a team of 50 people providing that support around the country.
Yeah, no, I've been to the Grand National in a couple of instances, and obviously Royal Ascot and the various other bits and pieces. And it can't be underestimated just how much of a, not just a lifeline, but an essential service this actually is. So allowing for that, what's the great news about the 60th anniversary of the Injured Jockeys Fund and what's going to be happening with respect to this year's Aintree Grand National?
Well, we are extremely fortunate in that Betfair are supporting us and our sister charity, the Irish Injured Jockeys Fund, through a campaign that they're running with Rachel Blackmore. And for every win that she's had between the Cheltenham Festival and here at Aintree, there's a significant donation for both charities. So we are rooting for Rachel. She's actually here. She's on track at the moment riding. And she's a brilliant ambassador for the sport, obviously being an amazing female jockey. Very unassuming, so polite, so eager to help. So it's a brilliant campaign and we're very grateful for that support.
Absolutely. The Serial Winners Fund Initiative, I think, is the Betfair connection from that point of view. So, again, you're a point-to-point rider. You've covered that side of things from that point of view. I mean, we know that, in essence, people have got differing views when it comes to point-to-point and Grand National and so on and so forth. But it is something which, once it actually connects with your good self, it really is something which is a truly phenomenal and wonderful occasion. I mean, anything that you'd like to add in terms of, say, you know, why the Injured Jockeys Fund continues to be such an excellent sort of charity, and also the importance of the Grand National?
Well, I think people who watch racing, and there'll be however many million tuning in tomorrow, you know, they'll be spotting your Harry Cobdens, they'll be spotting your Harry Skeltons, your Sean Bowens, your Rachel Blackmore. And they are the stars of the show, of course, with the horses as well. So they pick their jockey and they follow them. And then they'll see them get covered in mud. They'll see them have a tumble. They'll hopefully see them get up and walk to the ambulance. And it's a high adrenaline. It's a real exciting sport. And Thrills and Spills are part and parcel of that. And so we're the support mechanism at the back end who sort of patch up people, get them back on track, keep them healthy, keep them happy. So we're really grateful for the support that we receive. We've supported over, I think, 2,000 people since the charity was first set up. It's an amazing charity. We are so indebted to people like Jack Berry, who you mentioned to start with, and John Oaksey. We've retained those family roots. We're not flashy. We don't do anything. For the PR side of it, it's much more of an authentic service looking to support our jockeys who need that help.
Got to ask the question, Lisa, do you have any particular tips? Or is it just a case of, well, obviously it's got to be Rachel Blackmore, we're backing her all the way, or is there anybody else that you say maybe it's worthwhile having an each way on this particular runner and rider?
Well, it's got to be Rachel, but actually my heart is with Gina Andrews on Late Night Pass, because she's a sort of she's my second cousin. It's very much a family affair. The horse is trained by her husband Thomas, it's owned by her mother-in-law. She's an amazing female ambassador for the sport as well. So we will be cheering Gina on.
I mean, I know the phenomenal skill that you need to do point to point. Were you ever tempted, Lisa, to actually go for the Grand National yourself?
I so would have loved to, but I didn't have a horse that was good enough. Well, that was my excuse anyway.
Very sensible. Okay, back to the Injured Jockeys Fund. For those people who want to find out more details and find out about the excellent work that you do, and obviously the charity in general, where would you actually suggest they should go?
Straight onto the website, and please do have a look. So www.injuredjockeysfund.co.uk. Loads of information there, and we'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. It's been awesome connecting with you, good self, today, Lisa. Have a fantastic Grand National, and hopefully we should speak again, because it's a few years since actually we did some stuff for the Injured Jockeys Fund, so maybe we need to actually revitalize our connections there. Lisa Hank.
Yep. Thank you. That would be great.
Chief Executive Officer of the Injured Jockeys Fund, huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
But I wanna try. something.